Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. That's Sarah over there.
Certainly is.
And under there, it's Chris.
Good day to you all.
Good day to you, sir. Now, in the current climate, much of public opinion seems to be rather polarised. Whether it's in politics or in the pub, there are many opposing views on all manner of subjects, with some people often craving feelings of outrage. In this argumentative age we find ourselves in today, we're answering this question. How can we disagree well?
Well, I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently. I don't think of myself as someone who's particularly good at disagreeing. I always back down. I am a classic backer downer.
Yeah. That's the phrase.
Yeah, we'll go with it. We'll get it in the dictionary.
Or coward. No, I'm joking.
I disagree. Step one, I'm on my way to learning. But no, actually, the three of us had a disagreement little while back about, I think it was
Chris's
about the
haircut.
Yeah, I mean,
I said it looked nice. You hated it. Oh no, sorry, that was behind his back. We spoke about that.
So I think we were disagreeing over the wording of the question for the show, because I mean, we often have a sort of a discussion, a debate about it, don't we? But we were definitely disagreeing. You know, I was on one side and I think the two of you were quite firmly on the other side. But I felt like we actually had a really good disagreement where we both put forward what we thought, why we thought it. And I was thinking about why did it feel like such a good disagreement? And I think what it boiled down to was that, you know, obviously we are friends, but also it's that I trust that you value me, you think that I have good things to offer, that I am, I don't know, at least a little bit intelligent, and that you weren't going to be behind my back saying like, oh, what an idiot, can't believe she'd said that. I really trusted you, and I really felt safe to put my ideas forward, so that even if you said, you know, no, we disagree, I wasn't going to be mocked or anything like that.
I hear what you're saying. We didn't say anything behind your back, don't worry. And Chris, we didn't say it. But I assume you two say all sorts of things behind my back.
It's not behind your back. We tell everyone.
But can you unmute me, Chris? I would request that, or unblock me. No, I think you're right, Sarah. I think that's well said there. This week, you know, I understand a falling out is not, say, a disagreement, but clearly there's been a disagreement somewhere between, say, Team Harry and Meghan and Team Royal Family. And it's quite sad. I mean, whatever one may think about that, it's a very sad and regrettable situation, and there's obviously a lot to it. And I don't really have a particularly strong views on that, because I've not heard any of these private conversations going on. And I often wonder why people have such strong views about stuff that they ultimately really don't know about. But I don't want to get derailed from that. But it's interesting. Disagreement is absolutely fine. And I think that often we can be taught, or maybe not taught, but we can fall into this pattern, Chris, of believing that it's something that we need to avoid at all costs.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about Sarah's example is, I think also there's a common goal. So you know, we're all actually aiming for the same goal here, which is we want to make a good, you know, show and show titles. And as you said, I think if you all know you're at least pulling in the same direction, that starts to help with disagreement, because as you said, Sarah, like ultimately, someone puts forward an idea, and you know that the other guys value you, and especially with you, Sarah, I mean, it's your job. Like, you are very good at this. So, you know,
oh, thanks,
so that aside, at least I'm if you put forward an idea that I don't agree with, I know you're doing it for our good. Do you know what I mean? Like I think too often I can get, one can get into the habit of judging other people's actions and our own motives. But actually, if we look at the motive behind someone that actually Sarah wants to make a good show, then that actually helps kind of the process. And I think another thing is that just not to personalize it. Do you know what I mean? I put forward an idea or you did. And it's like, not like, oh, you always reject my ideas. Then it becomes a thing between people, right? And not the idea itself.
Yeah. And that's about our relationship, which is kind of, one of the things I was saying is it's about our relationship. If I felt like you always rejected my ideas, that might be different because I fundamentally don't feel valued by you.
Yeah.
But because I do feel valued, I know that, as you said, we're working towards the same goal. Disagreeing, as you say, Marcus, is not necessarily bad. It actually, sometimes that process of disagreeing, debating, discussing means that you can drill down to actually get the very best thing.
Yeah.
And you might actually find a solution that neither side had come up with in the first place.
Yeah, Chris, go on, sorry.
I was just to say, on your point, Marcus, like, it's healthy to disagree. Like, it's unhealthy to not be able to disagree. Like, that is, some people might be raised in a home where they weren't encouraged to disagree. And I think that's a shame, actually, because I think we learn through healthy disagreement. You know, we learn through, if I put forward an idea and Sarah or you or anyone disagrees and they put forward a good rationale, then I should be open to learning from that. There should be, I think listening is key to disagreeing well. Like, if I actually sit down to listen to you and not to just project, then actually there can be some sort of back and forth. I do feel like that's probably what's missing from the common debate nowadays is people just want to say their piece and not actually hear to the response, or they prejudge the response that they think they're going to hear and they don't actually listen to the nuance of argument.
Yeah, I think agreeing just to be nice for a quiet life isn't always a good way to sort of disagree. And I've done that before in the past where...
I definitely think I've been...
Do you know what? I had a eureka moment quite recently that a friend of mine said... Well, it wasn't a eureka moment. That suggests that I sort of thought it up myself. You know, someone passed on some wisdom to me and I just thought, oh my goodness, that's such a game changer. In my line of work, I have had the odd volatile person to deal with once in a while. And
Chris is a nightmare to work with, to be fair.
Oh, sorry. Dear. Do you know what? If the world was full of people with Chris's temperament and wisdom, we'd get a lot done a lot quicker and a lot happier. I will say that for the record.
Very true. Very true.
Normally, I like to throw you all under the bus, but I feel I can't in this particular. But I think touching on something you just said there, Chris, is often prejudging what someone may think or say. And then you suddenly create an argument in your head back, and then they say that, and I'll say this. Mm. And you sort of look, well, hang on, they haven't said anything yet. Now, sometimes it isn't silly, it isn't unwise to think, I know this particular person can be quite volatile, or this particular group of people, or whatever. Mm. So one does have to have a bit of a game plan if you're entering a negotiation, or whatever. But the piece of advice someone said to me was, is their reaction or their response... and the way they disagree with you, is that your problem? As in, is it your hang up, if you see what I mean? And if you answer no to that question, which I guarantee you 90-odd% of people would, given their undesirable sort of meeting, negotiation, they have to do whatever, then if the answer is no to that, then don't worry, essentially. You can't control. So it's almost a bit like telling a child, right, we're going out and it's really, really cold, you have to put your jacket on, and they go kicking and screaming. And you go, well, you need to put your jacket on before we go out, okay? And that's the end of that kind of thing. You can kick and scream, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to take it personally because you're a child. You know, you're 3 years old, you don't really know what's going on. And I think that was it for me. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, like I need to say my piece, and if I need to disagree with them, I will disagree with them, but I'll do it in a way that is loving or wise and all the rest of it. But if they disagree badly with me, yes, that can leave a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, absolutely. But that's their problem. That's coming from not a very happy place or not a very good place or whatever. And I thought, blimey, yeah. And with that in mind, that sort of helped me think, right, well, the next time I want to say and get my piece across, whether it be in work or with friends or in whatever situation or scenario you can imagine, then actually you come across a bit calmer and you deliver your agreement or disagreement, but we're honing in on disagreements today, as you say, Chris, you do it well. And if you disagree with someone well, they can't really complain too much.
I guess that's it. Like, there's just, as you said, it's fundamentally, I mean, we are obviously not talking about issues of, like, you know, whether we disagree on whether murdering people is wrong or whatever. Fine. But most things, 90% of things, there's no problem with having a different view on it.
Hmm.
And so to put forward your view, as long as you're doing it, for me, I think the only time it starts to fall down is if you're doing it in a aggressive way, a disrespectful way. Like, I'm fine to disagree with you, but if you start making it personal, if it starts to get a bit shouty or a bit disproportionate to what we're talking about, if we're talking about, I don't know, we're disagreeing about whether Domino's or Papa John's is better.
Mm-hmm.
If you start getting angry, that's disproportionate. That's a bad disagreement.
Yeah,
probably gonna leave the chat.
But even if it's to say something more serious, like in Parliament, for example, Sarah, like you know, you can watch the debates and whatnot. The best debates are when people give their opinions and they give them very concisely, very well, and whatnot, and it makes you think, okay, I see what you're coming from, and it goes back to your point, Chris, about why is everybody in Parliament? In any given country, in theory, to make the country a better place. That's why. I understand in any case, if you're too selfish interest, yeah, whatever. I'm talking very, very generally. It's why, you know, Speaker's Corner in London, in Hyde Park, which is a very kind of famous place where you could go and have debates and so on. I'm sure they have this in other cities around the world and so on, but that's the only one that I can think of the top of my head. And I remember going down there years ago, and I just thought, this is just shouting, actually. I came here to actually engage, or not engage, but listen to some quite interesting debate. And it was just ranty, ranty argue. And I just thought, no, I'm not interested. And any politician, going back to Parliament, worth their salt, will say it's important to have a good opposition in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's healthy. It keeps people accountable and all that kind of stuff. And just one more from the political sphere. In terms of the common goal, and much has been said, and we've probably, a lot of people will have seen the video of this, but John McCain's famous speech after he lost the election to the very overrated Barack Obama. in case anybody didn't hear last week, we chatted about Barack Obama. Well, I did a little bit. Go and listen to that. A bit tongue in cheek, but yes, John McCain's famous speech about after he lost the election against Barack Obama. And again, he clearly thinks that the country, the United States of America, should be run in a different way to Obama, hence them going head to head. But of course, he recognises the common goal and disagreed with Obama profoundly well in that speech, I would argue. I'm sure a lot of others would. Rather different to Donald Trump's approach to things. And you see the difference there. You see how you can disagree well and you can disagree extremely badly.
I think one interesting thing to think about with disagreement is the relationship to power, because usually within any relationships there's power dynamics that are going on. And so, you know, let's say you disagree with your boss, then you just have to navigate, how do I disagree to somebody who in this situation has more power? But equally, we then have to also reflect on, if I have positions of power in relationships, how do I disagree well? And I had a really good lecture the other day at college, and he was saying about when somebody with power over you, how do you engage with that? And he said that if you have a posture of humility going in, he said power seeks to make oneself big and you small. Like, in this situation, I want to make you feel small, and therefore I can exert power over you. And he just said, if you go in kind of with a, and say, he said, as an example of a posture of humility, go in with a pad and a pen, say, okay, I'm listening. Immediately that takes the power away.
Nice.
And then you go, okay, thanks for your points. I'm going to go away and think about this or reflect on it. And again, they can't be shouting and ranting and raving. If they do, it shows them up for what they're doing. But actually, it really disempowers that element of control. And you then feel like you've got a bit of control back. And for me, disagreement, I do best when I actually have time to think. When I have time to reflect on it even is this me? Is it a problem within me? Am I being insecure? Or actually, do I think that they're being wrong? But it comes back to that listening thing as well.
Yeah.
But again, navigating power dynamics within disagreements is it just adds that element of complexity to trying to figure it all out.
Presumably, you can't let the other person see what you're writing down. You know, you're
just, like,
just having a game of noughts and crosses to yourself. Yeah, absolutely.
Wrong.
Yeah. And then you turn the pad around and show them what you've written.
You've actually just drawn a picture of them with like a silly moustache and glasses.
Yeah.
Power play.
Yeah. No, but it's an interesting one. Sorry, Chris, you were going to say.
No, I was going to say, I think we talked about it on a previous show, isn't it? It's about, you need to feel like you've got a voice. You know, that silence is oppression. And if your voice is being taken away, then you need to look at the power dynamics and see how you can redress that. But by shouting louder, my experience and advice would be that never works. Just shouting louder doesn't really work. Or it would do for a short time, but essentially it fizzles out.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you talk about the volume, kind of, you know, if people start shouting, if people, you know, are talking over you. I've found, especially in like a work setting, but kind of in other settings too, if I'm disagreeing with someone, and this is especially, as I feel like a lot of us are probably doing at the moment, if it's over WhatsApp or something or you know, some other kind of messaging, if someone has said something which you just fundamentally really disagree with and you think that, I don't know, either they're not engaging properly in the argument or whatever, just leave a bit of silence. Just actually, just don't say anything for a bit. Mm-hmm. And it may be that either you then start to think about more, you know, what they've said, and you might, you know, have something better to say. But actually, I found a lot of the time you will get another message, or, you know, if you're in person, you leave a little gap and you don't say anything, they will fill that gap and they will probably backpedal a bit.
Yeah, the great sports commentator Barry Davis used to find that was a helpful approach when he would interview, especially with football managers who can be very passionate and very in the heat of the moment, of course, after a game of football and so on. And you know, he would interview the likes of Brian Clough and these kind of great characters of the game, but could be very, very tempestuous, if that's the right word. And he would say that if he asked a question and there was a disagreement, you know, because the manager's wanting to kind of snipe at him, say, oh, you really think that, do you? And so on. He would just sort of look at them and go, well, yeah, as if to say, well, I've asked you the question. Are you going to answer it? Because the camera's on you. This is your interview. This is not about me. This whole thing is right now about you. And it was a very effective method.
It goes back to what you were saying there, isn't it? You're not responsible for their response.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're like, actually, well, I've asked you a question. Your response is on you now. And so I think I can often maybe feel panicked into responding again. And as you said, Sarah, actually, if I just think, okay, just leave a bit of silence, you then have a moment to decide, is this on me to respond? Or actually, do I, the ball is still in their court. I don't need to run up to the net so quick. Like, it's okay.
Yeah. And if it's, you know, I've made my point and I'm happy that I've made my point in a respectful, empathetic way. I don't have to give any more. You know, I've played. I think as long as everyone is playing their part in that conversation well, then you don't have to always reply. And sometimes as well, know when the disagreement has run its course. Sometimes you reach a point where it's just like, we're not going to both end up on the exact same page here, and that's okay. And you know, you can just say to someone, this has been a really interesting chat and I feel like we don't agree.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad I can have these conversations with you. I really value that we've got a relationship where we can do that.
But I think nowadays, though, with you know, a lot of identity politics and so on, people think if you think like that, we can't be mates. And actually, that is bang. That's gone into judgment. That's not disagreement. Disagreement and judgment is two totally different things. You know, you can lovingly disagree with someone. I mean, I'll be honest. A number of years ago now, I used to, I got caught up in it a little bit with some of my mates who, there was various elections and so on. I'm sorry to harken about politics, but, you know, I'm just very generally talking. So, you know, it's an obvious one. And I was sort of thinking, what, if you vote for them or you think that about that policy and so on, well, you're obviously an idiot then. And that's very, very, it's very dangerous. You shouldn't think like that. Again, Sarah, quite clearly, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're
there
voting,
there are some things.
Yeah, there are. You know,
there are
but
some
come on, we're not talking.
Yeah,
we're not talking about an extreme, you know, or something like that. But you know, I still know one or two people who genuinely believe that if you vote for a particular mainstream party, and not one of the ones, not even UKIP, you know, not one who's a bit weird and wonderful on the edges, but a particular mainstream party, and you'll have this with people in the United States as well, they think you're a scumbag if you if you think like that and you vote that, because you're dismissing that person, where they're from, you know, where how they've been brought up, this, that, and the other. And you've got to be very, very careful, and that ultimately leads to the much talked about sort of cancel culture, in that, and you're suppressing someone then, and that's not a good idea, you know. And I think that yes, there are times when certain groups of people in society need to just listen to other, often minority groups. Absolutely, that is needed, you know. But no group in society, I think, should just be silenced as a blanket sort of, right, you lot, shut up sort of thing. Because I just think, again, you don't entertain extremism, but we're not talking about that sort of, you know, that kind of rhetoric. You're talking about, you know, normal public discourse. And I think, Chris, you know what it's like? If you try and silence a whole group of people without, you just said it there, if you try and silence people, shut up, not a single word out of you or anything, when you lean heavily on people, they tend to kind of kick back, and that's exactly what you're trying not to achieve.
Yeah, and it's exactly what we said before. Like, you can't silence people. Everybody has a voice, and it's funny. Like, the two things I say to my little boy every day, so that it goes in his head, I think is essential, is people like you, and they want to hear what you've got to say, because I want him to grow up not worrying what people think about him, and also knowing that his voice is valuable. And I think that's really important, boy or girl. I'll say that if I have a little girl one day, I'll say exactly the same to her, probably more so to her. But like, I just think it's really important that people, because I think my thing is often that if I disagree with people, I feel like they won't like me, or I feel like they'll think that I'm not very nice, and you know, actually, but if I don't worry about how I appear, but again, I do it from a place of love and of going in the same direction and being for other people, then I won't worry so much about what people think about me, and I'll be able to say my voice. So I think those two things are really, really important, to think like, oh, well, I am likable. People do like me, and not in an arrogant way, just in a, it then calms your fears that there'll be distance and separation and punishment, really. And, you know, for me, separation is punishment. Yeah. Well, it's the worst form of punishment if you go to prison, is to isolation. So again, it's trying to get, I don't want my son, I don't want people to grow up with those sort of negative voices, that people don't like you and your voice is invalid. It's because that does not manifest well. We can see that.
You know, the BBC, they have set out 8 tips on how to disagree better.
Have they really?
Found this? Yeah, which is quite nice. And the first point is, you don't have to agree. Something we can all agree on.
or not.
We've fallen at the first hurdle. The second one is, don't aim for the middle ground, they said. Splitting the difference isn't the answer when you fundamentally disagree. It's about working hard to find common ground, which I thought was interesting. Obviously, these are quite general, and I'm sure, again, one can come up with a situation where perhaps splitting the difference was the only kind of solution or whatever. But that's what they say there. And the third one is, how you talk is better than what you talk about.
I am a strong believer in that, we can talk about, we can debate most things, but it's if you're speaking with kindness and respect, for me, that's where it makes or breaks the disagreement.
Yeah, you don't beat people into becoming better. You know, you beckon them into a better place. Number four is, speak truthfully. An open and honest dialogue is usually very important with particular disagreements. And again, that's it. Don't suppress what you're actually kind of feeling, or don't lie to kind of help the situation get a bit better, which is sort of going into some of the early points that that you dears were saying.
Just go away feeling rubbish.
Yeah.
You just feel like... And then I think that also creates separation and distance, because you don't want to
feel trampled
again. Yeah.
And you've sort of wasted the disagreement, haven't you? Like, I find it very hard to, you know, especially if I vehemently disagree, I find it hard to be honest about that. But if you've already loosened the lid on it, just get in there and sort it out at that stage, because otherwise what was the point in having that discomfort anyway?
The fifth one, listen intently and aim for empathy. Important to take in what the other person says, as we talked about. Number six was dial down the rhetoric and rein in the insults. And that's rein, R-E-I-N, as opposed to R-A-I-N, which would be a very different approach. Rein in the insults.
Get them on.
Seven was understand the difference between fact and opinion. I mean, that is crucial to any kind of debate or chat, absolutely, and something that often fails people in the age of social media. And lastly, it says go looking for trouble. And this is the idea that people that don't just talk to people with the same points as you, engage in chat with people who have differing opinions, but always do it lovingly and wisely, which I thought was an excellent point, actually. You know, the old echo chamber we talk about and so on and so forth. Yeah. And some of their findings were based upon a book which Arthur C. Brooks, a Harvard professor, wrote called Love Your Enemies, How Decent People Can Save America from the Culture of Contempt.
We should probably check that one out the library.
Further reading. And presumably if it can save America, then it can save other countries as well. And in this book, he says it's actually quite important that we not agree on everything. And it's perfectly fine if we permanently disagree. And he argues that disagreeing in of itself is not the problem. It's how we do it. And a description of the book includes this paragraph, which states, to bring America together, we shouldn't try to agree more. There is no need for mushy moderation, because disagreement is the secret to excellence. Civility and tolerance shouldn't be our goals, because they are hopelessly low standards. Interesting point. Mm. And our feelings towards our foes are irrelevant. What matters is how we choose to act. This book is a roadmap to arrive at the happiness that comes when we choose to love one another despite our differences. And I couldn't have put it better myself.
Like that.
Yeah.
Maybe I will read it.
Chris is nodding in agreement.
I am. I was thinking about the word tolerance, actually, because that was
a favourite of yours.
Well, it's self-defeating sometimes, because people become intolerant of your tolerance, or, you know, it's an interesting concept. I like it. I like what he says, and it's good to have ideals. It's just, we're in a very aggressive culture right now. It's so polarised, and I think that, the art of coming together, and I think you hit it right from the off, Sarah, like, it's got to be through relationship. Mm. So, like, for me, I think when I said last week about how being right isn't that important, I'd choose relationship over being right, is because I think once that relationship is broken, I don't think you can then have an exchange and a conversation. The trust is destroyed, you know, and if I don't trust someone, I do not listen to what they say. It doesn't matter who they are. If trust is gone, I will not hear you. It just won't go in.
And it's interesting you saying about when you have relationship, there can be good disagreement, because I wonder if that is why social media can be so toxic sometimes, is you don't have a relationship with some random stranger that you're shouting at on the internet, that you're not coming from a place of, well, you know, I love and respect you even though we are disagreeing. You just immediately go in with, I can't believe you'd say that. You're a terrible person, X, Y, and Z. And I mean, like, right back at the beginning of starting this podcast, we did a show on debating on social media.
Yeah.
Which I feel like I want to go back and listen to now, actually, because I remember Chris liked doing it. But I just think, I wonder if that lack of relationship adds to the toxicity of social media debate. Mm.
I was doing on Instagram before we came on. But what I realized is disagreeing with good questions seems to be a better way of doing it. So not making statements, which is like use and stuff, but actually saying, okay, well, what do you mean by this? Or like using good questions to disagree and unravel their argument. So either they will end up doing themselves out of an argument, or you'll have more of an insight to either go, mate, they could be right here, or actually, no, I think I think they're wrong here, and I've got more of an insight. But asking good questions is a really good way of disagreeing well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, it also shows that you're listening to what the other person's saying, which was one of the BBC's eight tips.
But you do have to listen to what people are saying, because otherwise you can just go in and ask questions for, you know, just to say your point. And there's a brilliant quote I heard that is, everyone is listening with the intent to reply and not to truly understand, and that's because we exist in a culture of comments. But we really do need to listen, not just to reply.
Yeah, and I think that if people do listen, and again, it's like lovingly disagree, I think with regards to the extremes, I think they begin to shrink. Because yeah. people then to see the people, and that's the way to do it. You know, I understand there are certain things that you just, you can't put up with. That's why you have the law, the laws in place. But I do think that's the way to do it. Absolutely right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here endeth the lesson. if
Thanks
you
be
disagree,
to God.
Yeah, exactly. May the blessing of the Father, the Son. I think, you know, if you do disagree with us, then up yours with a rusty one. And if you have anything to say, of course, you can find us on social media at AQQAPod is where you can find us. But it's always fascinating to hear your points and so on and so forth. So yes, and feel free to give us a rate and review on wherever you get your pods, because that does help us indeed. But until next time, thank you very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, good listeners. See you next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.